the first act of the first pope is to contradict Jesus. That's the very first act. And the very first thing that the pope, the new pope gets is, get thee behind me, Satan. Now, I found it very instructive because, you know, if that would have happened today, we would have said, Peter, you need to resign. Put your resignation on Jesus' desk in the morning. You are not fit to be the pope. But Jesus says to him, get behind me, Satan. Now, why is he saying that? Because Peter is being normal. And for Jesus, being normal doesn't mean that you are all right. It means you're as messed up as everybody else is. I don't know if you caught it, but one of my favorite sentences in the second reading, which is why I have this out, it says, do not conform yourselves to this age, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and pleasing and perfect. So the question that comes is then, okay, if that says that, because what's happening with Peter is that his mind is not yet like Jesus' mind. Notice that the next thing that Jesus will say to him, I think in another gospel, he's saying, you are thinking like man does and not like God. Notice that what Jesus is saying is, you're still looking at things from the perspective of what is ultimately good from human terms, but you're not looking at it from God's perspective. Now, what that has to say, it says to me, is that God's perspective is not sometimes very much like our own. That sometimes we understand God, and it's almost like, there's an old saying a good friend of mine taught me too, that God made us in his image and likeness, and we have never ceased returning the favor. That we constantly make up God as if God thinks the way that we do. And so Peter's doing that. He is wishing Jesus well, as most of us would. But Jesus is saying there's something higher than wishing another person well. And when Peter was saying, oh, I hope that doesn't happen to you, he was actually saying to Jesus what Satan had said to him in the desert. That if you just worship me, meaning the values of the world, you can be king of the world and you don't have to go through all of this. And Jesus responds, man does not live by bread, meaning nature alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. For Jesus, the top value is not wellness. For Jesus, the top value is not prosperity. It is not everything being equanimity the way that he wants it. For Jesus, the greatest priority is what God his Father wants and his mission to follow it, even if it means facing suffering that is unimaginable. And then Jesus continues today, and he says, if you want to be my follower, you cannot be my follower unless you pick up your cross and follow after me. Now, what does that mean? Jesus was not a masochist. then Jesus did not love what he was about to do. I always like to ask in classes that I teach this question. Do you think that it was God's will that Jesus be crucified? Do you think that it was God's will that Jesus be crucified? Now, remember, the night before in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus kneels down and he says, "Father, if this cup can pass from me, let it be so. But not as I will, but as you will." Jesus was not in love with the cross. He did not want to suffer. But he also understood what Peter did not. That sometimes there is, in the middle of what happens to us in life, that there is a higher calling than desiring the suffering to go away. That there is something greater that God is asking from us. Now, the answer is, because did God want Jesus to be crucified? We could ask the question about the flood. Question about the flood. Did God will this flood to occur? Did God will Harvey? Was God sitting there in his heaven and saying, "Harvey, just hang around. Hang around and dump 60 inches of rain on Houston and other places"? Was it God's will? Was it God's will that Jesus be crucified? I always answer that question, both of them, no, it was not. Neither was it God's will that Jesus be crucified, nor that Harvey caused the tragedy that we're in. Now, why did it happen? I don't know. But I know that it wasn't God's will. So let me answer why God didn't want Jesus to be crucified. Because, let's face it, he did get crucified. He asked not to be, and then he did. So doesn't logic tell you that, oh, well, then God must have wanted it to happen? And the answer is no. You see, what God was willing, I think, is that Jesus not run. That he not run from the evil that was about to befall him. In our experience, there are two kinds of evil. There is human evil, and there is natural evil. Evil that comes from nature. Both of them hurt. Both of them tremendously hurt. Jesus was about to be crucified because of human evil. And what God was saying is, let them do whatever they want to you. I will be with you. Do not run. Do not let yourself be intimidated, because I will not let evil stand. I will be with you. So the crucifixion wasn't God's idea. It was the evil of humanity. But it was God's will that Jesus take it and not run. So what happens when the evil is not the evil of humanity, but the evil of nature? Because Harvey didn't have any consciousness. But nature wasn't being evil. Nature was just being nature. And we happened to be in the way. But it hurts just the same. Exactly the same. And so the question is, so what should be our attitude? The attitude of Jesus was, let it be. The Father, let it be. Carry your cross, and I will be with you. God wasn't going to play like, sometimes I think we think of God as if he were playing chess. You know, that if we flood him, pardon the word, but if we flood him with enough prayers, that he'll remove anything that is going to be bad for us. But he doesn't, God doesn't do that. Sometimes he just lets things happen. And he did, in concern with Jesus. So what about us? I think he let it happen. Why? I don't know. It's always unexplainable when it happens to you. But I can't imagine a world in which God would be immediately removing everything from everyone that was going to, in the slightest bit, inconvenience us or hurt us. But the question still is, so what's our response? What should we be? And I think that's where the whole notion of, if you want to be my disciple, carry your cross, pick up your cross, carry it, and come after me. What does that mean? I think it means that we take what's happening and we do what we're going to put on the sign outside. That we realize that nature wasn't against us. That God wasn't against us. Or like some of these preachers are saying on TV, what happened with, remember when they were saying about Katrina in New Orleans, that it was the punishment of God for New Orleans, or the punishment of God to New York City, or I heard some guy saying that we were being punished for the city of Texas voting for Trump. It's ridiculous. So none of that is true. So what ought we to do? What Jesus told us to do. We pick up our cross. We say we don't like it. We hate it. But we pick it up. And we handle the crisis the way that Jesus taught us to handle it. We do the best we can and we help each other. And we trust that even when you get crucified with water, God is always there. And he will not let it stand. Let me close by quoting a little bit from my favorite psychiatrist that I always use. And his name is, you may have heard of him. His name is Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist that was put in a German concentration camp and 'cause he was Jewish. And while he was in the concentration camp, he found that the men in his unit that were the first to die were the men who had no faith, no sense. They were men who lived just for the today. They were tough. But what was happening was that they were surrounded by so much evil that there was no sense of any hope for the future. And so what happened was that in despair, they basically curled into a fetal position, many of them, and they died because of just the depth of the despair that they were in. And Frankl found that the men in his unit who had the greatest chance of survival were the men who had a vision that transcended the suffering that they were going through. For him, he was Jewish. For him, it was his wife. He describes being in a work gang one time and walking with prisoners and looking up and seeing kind of the sunlight almost, but in the center of the sunlight, there was an image of his wife's face and the love that he had for her and she for him. And he kept focusing on that. And that is ultimately what pulled him out. And he survived concentration camp. Wrote a great book, which I recommend to you, called Man's Search for Meaning. But the central quote that I think applies to us is this. And I think it comes from that book. He said, The ultimate human freedom is the ability to choose the attitude that you will have towards your suffering. The ultimate human freedom is the ability to choose the attitude that you will have towards your suffering. We don't get to choose our sufferings, but we do get to choose our attitude. And I think that what Jesus was saying is to do that. His attitude was not loving the cross. His attitude was following his Father and trusting in his Father. And I think that that's what we're called to do. We're called to look at God and we say, we don't know why this happened. We don't know when it's going to be better or worse. But we know that you are here. And that you don't leave us alone. And instead of focusing on the tragedy, we focus on you. For you are ever with us. And you never lead us wrong and never leave us to face our trials alone. That's the best I've got. It's not a total answer. It doesn't answer every question of curiosity. But I think it does give the Christian a sense of how ought we to behave. How ought we to focus our attention and to choose our attitude during this present moment of crisis. Houston, we bear each other's burdens.